This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The remarkable life of Professor Irene Hassenberg Butter is known to many people in Michigan. In her 2019 autobiography, Shores Beyond Shores, she formally told the story of her family's escape from Nazi Germany, only to be sent from their haven in Amsterdam to the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. They were subsequently scattered for a time among refugee settlements before she was finally reunited with her mother and brother some years after World War II ended. Her career at the University of Michigan School of Public Health delivered many dividends beyond her family's story, and she has never missed an opportunity to help people understand what history is trying to tell us. In honor of her work, the city of Ann Arbor is officially declaring December 11th as Irene Butter Day, and she joins us now. Professor Butter, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
As I mentioned, your family lived in Berlin, where you were born, and fled from there to Amsterdam. And ultimately, the Nazis sent your family to the camps. You've had so much time to reflect on the war's effect on your childhood, your father's death, and the unraveling of your family's lives. Is there anything that you wish that the little girl who was put on a train could know?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. I would appreciate if I had understood better what was going on with the persecution of the Jews.
What did your mother and father tell you before you had to get on the move?
Well, they really protected us a great deal. They didn't give us a lot of information. I think their main concern was that we would be frightened and produce anxiety. So they didn't tell us a whole lot.
It's kind of stunning to think that parents' concern for children is so great that they might be reinterpreting the things that were happening all around them and still trying to preserve, you know, what innocence and sense of safety they could provide at that point.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, whatever was happening, we could see, we could observe. So we just learned it from experience rather than from history or from explanation of the context.
What have you come to understand about the shaping effect that these experiences had on your life?
Well, I think going through an experience, 2 years of barbaric experience where we were deprived of everything, even just the basic necessities of human existence, has given me a lot of insight in terms of what human beings can do to other human beings that should never happen. And wishing that the Holocaust would have taught lessons to humanity, to be more compassionate, to be more tolerant, and to be more humane.
Yeah.
That's what I think, where I think education has failed.
You didn't start sharing your family story until later in life, when at your daughter's request, you first started visiting classrooms and talking to students. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like the very first time you told that story?
Well, very frightening, because my daughter was inviting me to her class in middle school when she was taking a course in public speaking in Ann Arbor. And at the end of the course, she had to give a 1-hour speech. And the topic that she chose was anti-Semitism, Hitler's conquest of Europe and the concentration camps. And she came home and she said, "Mom, will you be my visual aid and tell the students about the concentration camps?" And I was floored when she came home and requested me to do this, but how could I turn her down? And luckily, everything went well.
You've dedicated so much of your time to telling the story and working through what might be an appropriate response to hate. in your professional life, you co-founded the Raoul Wallenberg Lecture Series at the University of Michigan and a prize that honors heroes of human rights. And you also helped to start an Arab-Jewish women's dialogue group based in Ann Arbor. What would you like for people to know about how political rhetoric at a national or state leadership level, how that influences what we all experience in the behavior of everyday people?
Well, unfortunately, we live in a time of polarization and division and the promotion of hatred and divide. And so the fact that that influences people and increases prejudice and discrimination and intolerance and hatred is very sad. And so I feel that the more we talk about love, about compassion, about the fact that all human beings are made of the same fabric, irregardless of color, of ethnicity, nationality, religion, those things should not and actually do not divide us as long as we're open to differences and realize that those differences can enrich us rather than divide us.
There are moments in history that change the world in profound ways, and obviously World War II was one of them. I don't mean to compare what's happening with the COVID pandemic in this country right now to the Holocaust. But at the same time, this is probably one of the most significant historic events that a lot of people alive right now have lived through. And I'm just wondering what you observe going on in both your own community and nationally right now, as certain things that we assumed to be true about American society get turned upside down.
Well, that is true. People are isolated from each other. Families are divided. The usual kinds of reunions and celebrations cannot happen. And there is so much rhetoric that people are filled with anxiety and fear. And that's certainly analogous to a time of war. And I think another analogy would be the fact that we don't really know when this will be over. We know a little bit better that there is some hope in sight now for these vaccines, but for a long time, we didn't know how long this would last and how long the disease would be spreading. And as more and more people contract COVID, we're more and more in danger of contracting it ourselves. So the question is, how do you maintain hope and how do you maintain resilience and how do you maintain your desire to get beyond this, to survive it all? And that's the difficulty. You know, can we celebrate Christmas next year the way we will not be able to celebrate it now? Will I be able to go to my grandchild's graduation next year, even though there are no graduations right now? And all of this is very difficult. And to live with uncertainty is a difficulty in and of itself.
I think part of what I see people struggling with right now is certain realizations about the fact that folks in their own family might feel very differently about something as relatively simple as matters of public health than they do, or maybe that the political divisions that they might have felt in years past, you know, they could just sort of talk around, that maybe those are harder to avoid, or maybe questioning whether they should try to avoid those political differences and those conversations right now. Do you have any advice for people who are looking around right now and feeling like they may not recognize their communities or people in their families?
Well, you raise a very critical point, I think, because often the people I've met anyway if someone in their family has the opposite point of view, or a neighbor or whoever it might be, they say, well, I will never speak to her again, him or her again, because I can't tolerate that point of view. And I don't think that helps us, because what we need to work for is unity and unification and understanding and overcoming the divide and overcoming the hatred. So I would like to say that it's a better strategy to try to talk and to go deeper and find out why people feel one way or another, and whether there might not be commonalities that are avoided by not speaking. And certainly it doesn't help us to come closer together than we are today. Now, I know this is very difficult. I have not always succeeded in talking to people of the on the opposite end of the perspective, but I think we shouldn't give up.
As I mentioned, you founded a discussion group that is based on the ideal that we should talk to each other, even when we don't agree. Can you tell us anything that has been helpful as the women involved in Zaytuna, some of them Arab, some of them Jewish, have gotten to know each other? What were some things that were helpful in trying to talk through differences?
Well, the crux of Zaytuna, of our meetings, is to talk about difficult issues and to express our individual opinions, even if they vary, if they differ. And in order to remain sisters, friends, we don't have to agree about everything, but we might find new meaning in our discussions. And of course, we come closer together when we understand our histories, our backgrounds, our narratives, and why we are oriented in one way or another.
May I ask how this professor emerita of public health and survivor is spending Hanukkah in the midst of the pandemic?
Well, unfortunately, not with family as I had wished, but I'm very fortunate that my son, who lives in San Francisco, has come here to celebrate, and we couldn't be together for the first 4 days until he was tested, and luckily the test came out negative. So the rest of his visit and all of Hanukkah, we can be together, and we will Skype and Zoom with other members of the family and other friends.
Professor Butter, it is such a joy to hear your voice. Thank you for making some time to talk to us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.